Joining us now, we have Alex Andrade. He is our representative from District 2, the southern half of Escambia County, plus Gulf Breeze, plus the beach. Alex, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew. I also agree that the protests are a fundamental right.
So take us through this bill for just a second, because you became, if I'm not mistaken, an additional co-sponsor on the bill before it passed the House. What will this bill actually do for the people that are worried about the effect it might have on peaceful protest?
So the bill largely addresses a lot of the tactics that we saw groups like Antifa use last year to make protests devolve into the violence and the rioting that we saw all last summer. Right, one of them is they would go bail people out after somebody who was committing crimes was arrested at the protest. They'd go bail them out so that they could go straight back the rioting. It clarifies that if you are, you know, surrounding people at restaurants trying to scream at them to force them to say something, that's mob intimidation. It addresses a lot of the more heinous activities that we saw last year. People surrounding vehicles, breaking vehicles, damaging property. It just clarifies exactly what is and is not a riot. It's also important to note that we have not had a statutorily defined scope of what a riot is for decades. It's been a common law definition that's been very vague. This bill actually specifically defined what a riot is, so that if it passes in the Senate and gets signed by the governor, we for the first time have a statutorily defined definition of riot.
Is it going to pass the Senate? Because, you know, some of these bills we get all excited about, they got through the House. This one has not gotten very far. I mean, what's going to happen in the Senate? I know you don't speak for them, but you can assess it.
There's still a chance that it would pass, and that it could make it to the Senate floor. However, the Senate's criminal justice committee chairman, Senator Pizzo, out of Miami, he's a Democrat. He held his final criminal justice subcommittee meeting, and it was not on the agenda. Since it's not been heard in its first committee, it won't move. The Senate companion to HB1 won't move through the Senate committee process the same way HB1 made it through the House committee process. So if it's going to pass in the Senate, there's going to have to be some procedural rules that are pursued so that it can bypass the criminal justice subcommittee.
Why do we have three quarters of the Senate? Well, not quite three quarters, but two thirds of the Senate is Republicans, but we got a Democrat chair of a committee. That doesn't make any sense to me.
We don't have quite two thirds control in the Senate. So we're not quite there yet. We're close, but not a supermajority in the Senate. So
but even with the majority, how do the Democrats chair committees when they don't have a majority? Or even a tie,
because it's so much closer to being even in the Senate. There's just more leeway given.
Okay, all right. I'll be honest. A lot of times the way the Senate works, it's a little bit opaque to me. So I appreciate the clarification. Well, we'll see. Obviously, with that one. Meanwhile, as you well know, another bill that passed on Friday out of the General House, J.R. Williamson's bill and Representative Byrd's bill on allowing guns in churches that happen to be on, near, or in school campuses. As he calls it, a glitch bill. This one seems to be have more hope in the Senate, although gun bills in the Senate recently have been, you know, they never seem to quite get there. What's your assessment on the Senate side here?
The companion bill has been moving in the Senate, so I think it's got a very good chance. And it's important to note that this even applies to churches, independent churches that have daycares throughout the week on their property. This far churches like that even from having any kind of voluntary security team with concealed weapons on their property. So allowing churches the right to defend themselves again if they wanted to is something that it didn't even get very much debate in the House when it passed this week. I think everybody you know, understood exactly where we were coming from. And Jerry Williamson did a great job advocating for it.
Yeah, I was really surprised, honestly, because I had the whole five-hour session teed up to listen to all the debates, and they got through this. You guys got through this one in like a half hour. I thought, oh, that was easy. No big deal. And as you say, you know, one of the key things about this bill to me is it doesn't force any church to have guns that doesn't want to have guns, right? I mean, that's the simple version, is this gives choice to people who operate churches, right? Or synagogues or whatever.
Yeah, no, exactly. Exactly. If your church wants a policy that there are no weapons allowed, you can still have that policy.
Hey, the last bill I wanted to ask you about, we're talking to Alex Andrade, he's our state representative for District 2, was the COVID Shield bill. This has been a big process to get this through, and the details kind of matter here, but is this going to the governor? Where is the status of this one? Does it still wait for the Senate to figure this out?
Well, no, actually the bill that we took up last week, Thursday and Friday, was SB 72.
Okay.
I believe was the number. And it was the Senate's version that also included coverage for healthcare businesses. So the House's initial bill only covered non-healthcare entities. The Senate bundled the two bills together, coverage for non-healthcare and for healthcare entities, and sent that bill back to us for passage again. We'd already passed Lawrence McClure's non-healthcare businesses COVID liability bill a few weeks prior, and this was, you know, our time to take up the Senate's version and pass it. So we passed it, and then we also certified it back so it can get passed by the governor sooner rather than later.
So this bill would provide for businesses, nursing homes, hospitals, as long as they can basically show that they've taken reasonable precautions to not be subject to COVID lawsuits. They would basically have to prove a higher standard of negligence, and so that would give them some shelter from what we would think of as frivolous or unnecessary law. Is that basically the end result here?
Basically, I mean, if you remember, the CDC was giving out, you know, different guidance. It felt like almost every single week, you know, wear masks, don't wear masks. You know, it was such a moving target last year that the most well-intentioned businesses who were just trying to make ends meet, you know, they shouldn't have to live in fear of you know, some type of liability that they really couldn't be, you know, held liable for. We just wanted to make sure that businesses in Florida who've been working their tails off to keep their employees and their customers safe aren't living in fear for the next few years, from potentially frivolous lawsuits.
Alex, you know, whenever I have you on, I always talk with you about the bridge, because that is the issue for thousands of people in our area. I saw that we've covered up the signage that says tolls. I see that FDOT is adding an extended right turn lane. These are all good, you know, on Avalon onto 98. These are all good things. Do you have any update for us on, and I mean, I hate to ask because what's the point of hearing a date that you don't believe in, but do we have any expectation on what's going on with the bridge repair?
Yeah. So I spoke with Secretary Gaynor last week. You know, they're 2 weeks behind on turning over the report to me and publicizing exactly what their understanding of everything is. However, I've been reassured strongly that the DOT secretary believes strongly that after reviewing the report, reviewing all the information, Memorial Day should be the day for reopening. And they're doing their best now to come up with the best way to convey as much comfort as possible to the public. Although, as we discussed a couple weeks ago, I won't blame the public for not taking anyone's word on it. We're at a point where it's a more show, don't tell.
Mm-hmm.
I keep getting reassured that Memorial Day, you know, is the target. So,
and that's for full four lanes, right? That's for full reopening. Is that right?
I'm not gonna say two or four. I'm just gonna say reopen by Memorial Day. At this point,
something is far better than nothing. I suppose that's fair. Now, Senator Brox, when I talked to him on Friday, he indicated that he has actually stopped participating in the FDOT calls, and he wants to go inspect the bridge this week and talk directly to the people responsible. Are you going to be involved in that? Is that even going to happen? Do you know?
I don't know if that'll happen or not. You know, my last day in Tallahassee this week will be Thursday, you know, because Friday's Good Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I'll have the time to tour the bridge, you know, with everything going on in Tallahassee. But, you know, I've spoken with, again, representatives from DOT. I've spoken with representatives from Skanska. And I'm confident that, you know, Memorial Day will be the day. But I really can't blame anybody for not taking my word for it.
I understand. I do. Alex Andrade, he is our state representative for District 2, southern half of Escambia County, Gulf Breeze, and the beach. Alex, thanks for the time. Keep up the good work in Tallahassee, and we'll look forward to talking again next Monday.
Thanks, Andrew.